Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna, podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och jobbar med häst. I detta tredje och sista avsnitt med Gemma Pearson pratar vi vidare om stress hos häst och hur det kopplas till magsår och andra kliniska problem.
On to our next topic, which is stress and egos, because it's something I think that has been lifted recently a lot, the connection between stress and gastric ulcers in horses. And there's a lot of talking about the connections and also what to do to prevent egos by handling stress and so on. So the awareness is starting to increase, but what are the actual connections like? Is there any hard evidence for this, and what is it?
Yeah, so I think we've probably got harder evidence in other species than we do in horses, and it's probably worth looking at some of that literature. I think that can be really useful. Now, obviously, horses are a little bit different to a lot of species we deal with because the stomach is split into two sections. And what's actually quite useful is that rats are exactly the same. So rats also have a squamous and a glandular part to their stomach. I don't know whether they call it the margo applicators in between or not. But if you ever see a rat's stomach, it's really quite cute. It's the tiny, tiny horse stomach. So a lot of the original stress physiology experiments were conducted in rats. And what they did was they measured gastric ulcer lesion size. Obviously, this is at post-mortem. You don't get mini gastroscopes for rats. They measured gastric lesion size as an indicator as to how stressful certain things were. And I mean, these were, let's be honest, these were horrible experiments, and thankfully you would never get ethics to do these things nowadays. But at the same time, we learn an awful lot from them. So there are basically four key components to a stress response. So the first one is predictability. So the way they would often cause stress in these rats is they would put them in a cage, which the floor was a metal grid, and then they would electrify it. And of course, that's a painful experience. These rats would develop ulcers. But what they found was if you had two cages, the rats can't see or interact with each other. One cage has a light that comes on a few seconds before the shock. The other cage doesn't. Both rats receive the same intensity and duration of shock at exactly the same time. You see a big difference in lesion size. Because the rat where the light comes on, when there's no light on, that rat can relax and go about his normal daily routine. He knows that the light is going to trigger when he's going to get shocked. For the other rat, this rat has no idea when this is going to happen. So predictability is really important from a stress point of view. The other one is controllability. So again, the similar setup, the floor would become electrified, but the rat could press a lever to stop the shock. Now, again, it was paired with another rat that it couldn't see or interact. But it was rat in box one that when the shock started, he had to press the lever and that would turn it off for both box one and box two. And obviously, I'm talking about two rats. There were lots and lots of rats in the studies. And of course, the rat which has control, which can switch the electric shock off, had much smaller lesion size, even though they received exactly the same amount of shocks and same duration and intensity as the other one. So controllability is really important as well. The third one is if you have an outlet for frustration. So for rats, this would be gnawing on a bar or running on a wheel. For horses, I would say this is turning them out in a field or giving them something they can interact and manipulate with. That also reduces lesion size. And then the last one is social companionship, having some social support. So if you're going through this stressful experience with another rat, it causes less stress than if you're by yourselves. So, as I say, we have some really nice evidence that glandular gastric disease is kind of directly proportional to all of these different aspects of stress in rats. They've also done some work in dogs as well. In horses, I think we don't have the same quality of evidence. I think we're starting to move in that direction, but we're doing it from the other perspective. So we're looking at risk factors for EGUS. And of course, we know that having multiple different handlers is going to increase the horse's risk of developing EGUS. And that is a lack of predictability because different handlers will interact with horses slightly differently. They'll ask different things of them, but probably also controllability as well. So it's really important with horses that, if we are leading them, we give them a cue to walk forwards. As soon as they walk forwards, we release that pressure on the lead rope so they can control that pressure. And we also know, the things which we can use to induce stress, such as reduce friends, forage, and freedom, also correlate with an increase in gastric ulcers. What I would say is the majority of cases that I see which have gastric ulcers, so I guess there's the management side, isn't there? So the racehorses that are on restricted forage that are galloping and getting splash ulcers, that's a slightly different context. But the ones that I see that are living out in a field with other horses and they're getting ulcers, I think, right, there's that. What's driving gastric ulceration in these horses? These horses should not be a population that we're seeing ulcers in. And the majority of times, then, I think pain is acting as the stressor. And I think we all forget that pain activates the standard stress response in exactly the same way that fear does. And unsurprisingly, the majority of cases I would see would have musculoskeletal pain, and that would be driving it. And this can often be a problem because people will say the horse doesn't like being girthed up anymore. The horse is irritated when it's being brushed. It swishes its tail. It goes to bite. They're not going forward. There's this poor performance aspect. And now people will immediately go and scope them for ulcers. And I think we should, because if they have ulcers, they're painful and we should treat them, definitely. But at the same time, I would then say, why does this horse have ulcers? Now, if it's a horse that lives in a stable 23 hours a day and then just goes and is ridden in an arena, I'd say there are management factors that we have to change. But if this horse, if I can't see obvious management factors, then I would say I think we need to be looking for something else, and usually pain. And a logical place to start is to trot the horse up to lunge it to do a ridden evaluation to see if there's musculoskeletal pain.
So you think that this is something that we should look at when presented with a horse that has symptoms of EGUS, or the owner wants it scoped, that you should also keep this in mind, that it could be pain related, even though it's not obvious, no lameness and so on, and
Yeah, definitely. And I'll just tell you a little case history of a horse that I saw a little while ago now. And this was a horse that was very dangerous and difficult for the vets to deal with. So, as a several years ago, he'd been aggressive towards people. There'd been problems with him. They said he might have ulcers. So they had sedated him, scoped him, and he had some pretty nasty, I can't remember what grade they were, but significant ulceration of both the squamous and the glandular region. So he was treated with omeprazole and he turned into being a happier horse. He didn't stop biting completely, but it was 90% improvement. So everyone said, okay, it was the ulcers that were causing it. They stopped the treatment. A couple of months later, similar thing occurred. They then put him back on the treatment. He improved a bit, took him off it. Similar thing occurred. They then kept him on a maintenance dose of omeprazole. And over a space of a couple of years, he wasn't as bad, but he was never great either. He then came in to be rescoped because he was getting more aggressive. And he was incredibly dangerous for vets, so they had a kind of a protocol with the owner that they could do. And it's actually a good friend and colleague of mine that scoped him and kind of said, well, he's actually not really got any. There's a couple, I think, of grade one ulcers, which I'm not convinced the ulcers are causing this aggression. I think there's something else which has been causing the ulcers all along. And we thought, is it a stress response from a behavioural point of view? So I saw him as a behaviourist. And so things like doing his rug up, when people were doing the chest straps up on his rug, he would try to bite them. There are lots of areas that he was aggressive towards his owner in. So we worked through each one individually and we treated that. And we got to the stage pretty quickly whereby he would stand perfectly happy and calm for his rug to be done up, and we'd incorporate some clicker training in there. But then he started kicking out when he was having his feet picked out, and he'd not done that previously. And I've kind of said, you know, we're fixing one area, but then problems are coming out in another area. And it was only a few months down the line that I said, look, okay, because he couldn't go into the vets, you know, they could only do something once he was heavily sedated with oral domicide and gel, and then giving him more kind of IV sedation. So they weren't able to clinically evaluate him at all. But I said, just send me some videos of you riding him. And it was clear that he had a severe multi-limb lameness. This horse was in so much pain when he was ridden. And that wasn't evident when he just walked across the field or, you know, when people saw him elsewhere. And I actually think that a couple of years ago, this horse had musculoskeletal pain. And that had caused the ulcers in the first place. But because the ulcer treatment was successful, people had never gone looking for anything else. It was only once, as the disease was progressing, you know, omeprazole wasn't keeping on top of it anymore, that people looked for that. So, yeah, my take-home message is don't just treat the ulcers, also really think about the underlying cause.
Yeah, that can be other things, because I think we've been pretty good at learning that how management factors can play a role and to look at the management and the feeding and so on. But that's not all there is to it then. We also have to look at the whole situation for the horse.
Yeah, exactly. And I think recurrence is a big thing for me. So, as you say, we're better now at looking at management and feeding. And if you think, yeah, there are some problems there, and you treat the horse with omeprazole and you change the management and they never recur, then that's fine. But if they do recur, rather than just treating with omeprazole again, that's when you need to look a little bit deeper.
So, if you don't mind, I would like to go back to the rats because I think it's really interesting. They, in this research with the rats, they actually used the lesions or the severity of the ulcers to determine how stressed the rat had been when alive, sort of. But how did they make that connection in the first place? Do you know? Like, was it just assumed that this was a stress predictor because they knew that the more nasty they had been to the rats, the harder the lesions? Or how was the connections made in the first place?
That's an excellent question. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that one. These were experiments that were done many, many decades ago. And yeah, that is an excellent question as to why you would look at gastric, you know, why would you look at that in the first place? But I honestly don't know the answer to that one.
Okay.
But I will look it up.
Yeah, because I mean, it makes sense though to have it as a sort of a measure of stress when you see that increased stress means increased lesions. But do you, when talking about the pain related stress and the pain related gastric ulcers in horses, then is this something that you have, is this something that you've seen a lot, that you've done this sort of connection clinically, like if a horse has recurring ulcers that will keep coming back and doesn't really heal, that you, or is it more a hypothesis that that you have, or you know?
Yeah, so I see, obviously, I only really see behaviour cases now. So I see a very skewed population of horses. But lots of the cases I see have been treated for ulcers, plus or minus gastroscopy to confirm whether they had ulcers or not. And they haven't resolved, so then I end up seeing them. And a good proportion of the cases I see then turn out to have other forms of pain. I keep using musculoskeletal pain. That would be the most common one, but there are other aspects as well, even things like itchy horses. We would see that. Then on the other side of it, I think if you look at people that practice internal medicine, speaking to some of those specialists, they will say that, you know, the horses that are getting ulcers, that it recurs, actually, it's lameness. And I think Celia Ma was, hopefully I'm not misquoting her here, but I'm sure it was Celia Ma that had said that she had one pony which had bone spavin, and the reason they would know the bone spavin was flaring up was because the horse didn't enjoy having its saddle put on. It became grumpy when they were brushing it, and she would scope it and say, yep, the ulcers are starting to come back again. But also, this was when the lameness was flaring up. Now, they didn't, you know, riding it, they didn't notice any difference in performance. They didn't notice a lameness, but actually the vets were seeing that the lameness was increasing at the same time that it was, I said, presenting with signs for ulcers. I wonder, I think some of these horses present with this general grumpiness and not enjoying being tacked up. And I think that's not specific in any way, shape or form to ulcers or gastric pain. I think it definitely can be any form of pain can cause that.
Then, yeah, that's very interesting, because obviously pain is very stressful. I mean, if you are in pain, you will also have a higher degree of stress, obviously. And just something that you said, the itchy horses, I'm thinking also about the insect sensitive horses, the summer itch, or such cases could then most likely also be prone to ulcers because of the stress it's causing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think it's really important to control these cases. And it's an individual thing, isn't it? So some horses may have mild sweet itch or may have things and they just get on with their lives and it doesn't seem to bother them. Whereas others, it has a massive effect. And I'll tell you a quick story about another horse that I saw. Again, this is one that was a long way from where I am. It was the other side of the country, really. But I was down there, so I'd agreed to see it. And this was a mare that at this point in time was so aggressive that the owner, she had lived with a head collar on. The owner could clip the leader up onto the head collar and lead her to the field, let go, clip it back on to put her back from field to stable. But she could not attempt to touch the mare. And even leading her to and from the field, which was very close to her stable, she would have something to protect herself from this mare, because the mare would sometimes attack her and try and bite her. So, you know, where do you start with a case like that? And actually, one thing I will do quite a lot is put a CCTV camera up overnight and see what horses are doing when there's no one around. And I'm amazed through doing this in the hospital lots of times. And this is something that Sue McDonald in America kind of taught me, the amount of horses that do things when they think no one's watching. And as soon as there's any person on the yard, even not near their stable, they stop. And I can't remember if this mare had had an analgesic trial or not before, which hadn't made any difference. But we filmed her, and in the middle of the night when there was no one there, she was itching her hind legs. She was itching them on anything that she could itch them on. So I thought, well, and I couldn't examine them. You know, you couldn't even touch her mane, let alone go near a hind leg. So we said, well, there's a good chance it's going to be Coryoptes equi, leg mites. We can't, I'd hoped with some clicker training, maybe I could, we sometimes use the dog flea collars on the horse's hind legs. I thought, well, maybe we can, no, I couldn't get anywhere near her at that point in time. So we put her on steroids. And straight away, she became a little bit less aggressive. And then we could start to work with her. And then we could treat her. And we never, I'll be honest, we never got a diagnosis because we weren't going to start doing tape impression smears or anything on a horse that was that dangerous. But we were able to treat her. And then since then, she's made massive improvements. And she is a complex case. There are other aspects going on with her as well. But for her, you know, you wouldn't normally think, you'd normally think using an analgesic trial to rule out pain. But actually for her, it was the steroids that were needed because it was an itch as opposed to pain.
Mm. Yeah, lots of things that they can, that can stress them, I guess, and that we need to be open-minded and look everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. And you saying about the insect weary, so obviously the sweet itch horses, that's very stressful. But even horses without sweet itch, so Jana Winter Christiansen at our house, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not. So she conducted a study where they looked at horses and whether they had access to a field shelter or not. And that had a big impact in summer on their cortisol levels and their stress responses as to whether they could get away from biting insects.
Mm.
And, you know, horses are horses. It's amazing how often I go out onto yards and when I'm taking a history, they'll say, oh, the horse lives out all year round. He has a field shelter, but he doesn't use it in winter when it's chucking it down with rain. I have to bring him into the stable to keep him dry. And I say, well, does he use it in summer? Oh, yeah. You know, and I think the horse is choosing to stand out in the rain. The rain doesn't bother that horse. It bothers us because we don't like seeing them looking wet, but it doesn't bother that horse. But insects were bothering it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not really that difficult to imagine to not be able to escape them. Must be very stressful. But getting back to the connection to egos again, how important would you say is the stress reduction to manage and to prevent egos in a more long-term sense?
I think it's really important. And like I say, it's finding the underlying cause of the egos in the first place. So looking at the management, looking at whether they have access to friends, forage and freedom, looking for any potential sources of pain, and also looking at their interactions with people, because we want their interaction with people to be predictable and controllable. You know, so that the horse has a good relationship with people. And sometimes that's where we have to step in and help people if the relationship's fallen apart, get that relationship back on board again.
I think that's a good summarization or a good conclusion to sum this up. But just as a last point, what's your key take-home message that you would like vets in the Scandinavian countries to take with them from listening to these episodes today about stress and egos or both?
Okay, so I would say there are no nasty or grumpy or aggressive horses. There are just ones which are stressed, and we need to address that. We need to have a systematic evaluation to work out what is a stressor for that individual horse, which may be different to other horses, and then to address that.
Very short and concise message, but important one, definitely. Thank you so much, Gemma, for talking to us today. It's been really interesting, and I think that everyone who has been listening has learned a lot.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen. Våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.